Good morning, Southern Arizona, and the rest of you out there in cyberspace, coast to coast, around the world. Welcome to the Simmons Kirk Air Shop Talk Show right here in beautiful Tucson, Arizona. A little dark out there, a little chilly. I'm going to need a little jacket if you go out early this morning to do your jogging or your hiking or your whatever you plan on doing. But it's a beautiful day. I'm Jerry Simmons, your host. Along with me, of course, is my good friend, Jim Mooney from Frontier Towing. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Jerry. Good morning, everybody out there in cyberspace. Thanks for listening. Remember, live call-in talk show, 520-719-1490. Call in and give us your thoughts and opinions. Remember, folks, it's rodeo week, and it's Saturday. So it's super safe rodeo Saturday this week. Super safe rodeo Saturday. Oh, so if you made it, we made it through the parade. So this means that nobody got, everybody did good. So still super safe Saturday. It means slow down and move over, especially for Jerry's favorite vehicle, buckboard. If you don't know what a buckboard is, Jerry will gladly cue you in on what a buckboard is. He likes that. That's the original work truck, a buckboard. If you see one out there, move over, slow down, stop, take a picture. So with a pair of horses in front of that puppy. No texting your friends that you saw the buckboard on the road. Because that would be bad. We don't want to do that. No TikToking of the buckboard while rolling down the road. No drinking and driving because you saw the buckboard. So, watch out for those dog walkers and horses and bicyclists out there. You know, because they can pop up anywhere. Well, surprisingly, folks, things can pop up in your blind spot and you don't even see them until they're there. So watch out. Use your mirrors. Turn your head if you can't see. Just make sure you're visible on all sides. And if you're working on your buckboard or your pickup truck, remember to use the jack stands if you're jacking it up. And that still applies to the buckboard. Jerry can explain to you about, you know, buckboard wagon wheel repair, spoke repair. You want to talk about a lost start. Mr. Simmons can thoroughly explain. If you think working on a car is hard, work on a wagon wheel, folks. You got a whole, that's a whole nother art. But if you're going to jack it up anyways and left-hand thread those nuts off, use your jack stand. Chalk the wheels because there are no brakes on a buckboard or a buggy for that matter. Well, there is a brake, but it's, you know, problematic at best. If you've ever ridden one, you know that's probably the case. You don't have to worry about electrical too much on one, but if you're working on your car, disconnect your electrical if you're working on it. Keys, not too many keys for a buckboard or a buggy, but, you know, if you're working on your regular vehicle, put keys in your pocket. Hood prop, I don't know. I don't know what to do with the hood prop on a buckboard because there ain't one. But there is a Surrey. You could have a Surrey on top, right? You could have a French Surrey on top, or you could have the canopy over your buggy. So if you're going to take that down, that's like a convertible top expedition. So be careful there. Put your hood prop up. Don't stand in front of the buckboard with the horses attached. That's like standing in front of a car with a running motor. Because Jerry can tell you more than anybody on the planet, if those horses decide to take off, you are not stopping them, and they are not going to stop. They're going to turn around and go wherever they want to go. And, folks, if you've never experienced that, that is a true treat, or you are not missing out, because both Jerry and I can have experienced the runaway horse method. I'm just going to tell you something.
It's a lot of power.
A lot of power. When they talk about horsepower and torque, look out. Here it comes. So,
and they only got one horsepower, but it's amazing.
One. But it seems
when
like...
When the adrenal hits.
That's right. And you know, I don't care what kind of brakes are on your buckboard or your buggy. When the horsepower takes off, it's not stopping it. So don't stand in front of your buckboard with your horses attached, because you'll get caught in the tree. Now I know that seems crazy. You won't get caught in the physical tree, but you get caught in the tree for the horses. So that's the attachment point, folks. That's the steering gear is what you'd call it on a new car. So. Other than that, I think we covered all of our buckboard stuff. But yeah, so folks, if you think that working on a wagon is a simple thing, guess again. There's a whole lot of things that go on in wagon repair that are pretty much a lost art today. And it's a tough one. So kudos to you, Jerry, for able to keep those on the road for us.
Hey. The wagon come just a little bit before my time, even though I remember seeing them sitting around the farms and stuff like that. The thing with a wagon, I mean, we've got all sorts of equipment to work on cars, and a lot of that design stuff came from the wagons. I mean, like the wagons, if you stop and look at your equipment that is made and the way the wagons were made and the round wheels, the spokes, when you start repairing a wagon and refurbishing them like they do at the Pima County Fairgrounds, those guys over there are good. They're real good at what they do as far as putting those things together, because my gosh, you got to have a whole different set of equipment in order to work on a wagon versus working on a car. I mean, on a car, everything is convenient. On a wagon, we used to use a tree, a big old tree, about a 8-inch extended pole, and use a couple of cinder blocks or rock. Put that pole on there and pick up a axle on the trailer to change a tire and stuff out on the farm when I was a kid. I remember that. And I thought that was pretty cool. Every now and then I wind up having to use it now because either a jack broke or a piece of equipment failed, and that's what you have left. So it's nice to be able to MacGyver something every now and then. So, but it's not something I'd like to do on a daily basis. It's a lot of work. Got to take my hat off to these guys. And anytime you can make these wagons roll on the road, on a paved road, it's a different set of rules. It's got to go with the wheels and stuff. I understand that. But, oh, my gosh, it's just impressive to watch them. And they got overloads. They got a lot of people sitting all over the way. I seen one in the parade the other day. That wagon looked like a mama chick. It had everybody hanging on it. And I thought, that's pretty good that you can build a piece of equipment that old and bring it back to life and have it to hang on to. These people just sitting all over it. So I'm impressed, and it was a good job for the rodeo. They had some good-looking cowboys and cowgirls and horses, and everything went along well. I haven't heard of any crashes or anything like that, so congratulations to Tucson Rodeo Parade. All right, moving in, I run across a couple of things. Oh, a big shout out to St. Joe's Hospital, the cardio rehab section, which I've had the opportunity to visit for the last couple of 3 weeks. And Mike and his crew over there are doing an excellent job, very knowledgeable. That's something that I'd appreciate. I like dealing with professional people when you're dealing with an area that I don't know that much about other than get in trouble. I know just enough to get in trouble. They can explain everything that you're supposed to do, so I really, really appreciate what they're doing over there. Their classes are absolutely superb. They're just a friendly crew. It's actually been a pleasure going over there because nobody likes to go into rehab. However, when you've got to go, at least the people are nice. That's good. So good morning, Mike and crew out there. Keep it up, and we'll see you Monday morning. Cars and cold weather, overheating an engine. It seems like we get sidetracked a little bit when it comes to wintertime and cooling systems. I mean, we forget that cooling systems, you know, you say, okay, so it's 107 degrees in the summer. So we understand it's got to be, you know, taken care of. Well, your thermostat controls the water temperature up to 212. You know, about 210 is a good temperature to have the engine setting at because it burns everything clear. Anything is fuel for the engine, it actually burns really better at that temperature. We found this out with race cars. And, of course, we knew this before we were with the race cars. That's how we started adjusting the race cars to what we already knew. So, but in the wintertime, we think, well, you know, it's cold, so that'll keep the engines down. Well, yeah, to a certain degree, but you got a thermostat that controls the heat of the engine. And most of the time, if you don't stay with your maintenance program and get this thing set up for winter, is your antifreeze good or is it worn out? Liquid does wear out the additives in there. That's the reason you have these things changed. It's recommended that you do an antifreeze change every 2 years, 24,000 miles, whichever comes first. I was reading a little article about what happens, like what is severe duty. And I was kind of surprised to find out what most people take as severe duty. I mean, my goodness, it's almost like if you live in Arizona, you live in a severe duty, and you need to treat it accordingly. And so I said, okay. So I'm going to pull it up right here, give you my little book here. And I'm going to tell you what the automotive industry recommends you look at. And you don't have to believe it. You know, you can look at it and say, okay, now, what do they actually say about it? Well, today's driving, including the way we use our cars, how we drive them, and the conditions of our roads, normal driving is defined as steady driving in non-extreme weather or environments, okay? That leaves Tucson out of that equation. Today, being a severe driver is more the rule than the exception. It's more the rule than the exception. In other words, you're driving in severe duty. It's severe. The automotive industry refers to severe driving as stop-and-go traffic, Tucson, short commutes, Tucson, and it can go short or long, heavy loads, cargo, passengers, or towing a trailer. Go out on the freeway, see everything, all the above. And that's Tucson. And around the country, actually, some of the different places that we actually stream into, they have other little things that I'll get to in a second. Rough or mountainous roads. Okay, yes, we can go to Flagstaff. We can run in some pretty high mountains. If you go deer hunting, elk hunting, and stuff like that, you get into the mountainous roads, and they're dirt. Dusty or salt environments. Dusty, oh yeah. Salty, only if a salt truck turns over in the middle of the freeway. You have to go up in the mountains where the snow and stuff is to get involved with any kind of salt or anything treatment they put on the roads. Driving a car before it has a chance to warm up that's kind of a debatable issue. You have some people that say, oh, no, you just get in it and fire it up. Well, when you get in it and just fire it up, pull it in gear and take off, the fluid is heavier. I don't care what they do to it. It's still, the fluid is cold. The oil is cold. Differential gear lube is cold. It takes 20 minutes to heat up a differential gear lube. So it's, and they say, yeah, you can do it. I do it just to see if it's going to blow up the engine. No, it don't blow up the engine. But in the owner's manual on my truck, it says when you first fire it up and you put it in gear, you can expect a little erratic shifting until the transmission warms up, okay? But yet they say you just put it in gear and take off. Well, yeah, but if you put it in gear and take off and you haven't read your owner's manual, you won't know that that erratic shift is normal. I remember when you used to determine when you change fluid in a Chrysler by putting it in reverse and seeing how long it took to go to reverse. I mean, that was a standard rule. If it took a substantial amount of time, like 2 seconds, 2.5 seconds, to go into reverse, your fluid was dirty. You take it in, you change your fluid, everything is normal. I mean, cold, the cold didn't make any difference. And now it's the cold fluid. So it all boils down to what's the condition of the fluid, whether it's cold and too heavy to process, or it's dirty and too heavy to process. Because when it's dirty, it don't actually flow or heat up and do what it's supposed to do. It doesn't lubricate the way it's supposed to. So that all made sense. So let's see. All right. Dusty or salted road, driving the car before it has a chance to warm up. People, you may want to fire it off and let it warm up about a minute or so, and they say, oh, it's going to use gas. I don't care. It's warmer when I get in it. The transmission shifts better when I get in it. I like for stuff to be properly lubed before I start the rotation and expect it to move a 5,000-pound truck. So I'm okay there. Driving in extremely hot or cold weather. Welcome to Southern Arizona, people. Hot weather. As a driver, you should be aware of your vehicle and proper maintenance and repair. It as outlined in the books. If you do, your car will perform safely and dependable for years to come. That is a proven fact. And I'll tell you that from being in business 50 years. So just take care of it. Jim, you got anything you want to add to that?
Oh, on the warming up. So, you know, there's a myriad of controversy over whether or not you should whether or not you should warm your car. And I kind of agree with Jerry. Well, I agree with Jerry. I think the car should start. Remember, folks, I'm an old school guy. I remember when before synthetic oil, it would take at least 2 or 3 minutes for oil to hit the valve train. So by the time it picks up out of the oil pan, rolls through the rod and main journals, up the valleys, and into the lifters, it's a couple minutes. AAA will tell you that, nope, you need about 24 seconds. Get in the car, fired up, and as long as it takes you to put on your seatbelt or adjust the mirror or adjust the seat, you're good to go. I don't know, folks. Here's what I know, and there's only one way to get around this. No lubrication means super fast, increased wear, or breakage. So take it how you want. If you think that there's plenty, if that the thing will warm up in 20 seconds and the valve train is perfectly lubed and all the gears, you know, and on new cars are susceptible to this. And, you know, let me just finish this. New cars are highly susceptible to oil distribution through the engine. So if you think 20 seconds is good enough to get the oil to where it needs to get to, you're golden. Now, let me throw this at you. If you have never changed your oil, I can tell you for a fact, just like Jerry can tell you for a fact, not an opinion, a fact, that it will take longer to get to the valve train or the cam phasers, or everything on the planet that's hydraulically controlled in your motor today. That means the cam sensors, the crank sensors, all those little areas that have to be hydraulically driven by oil, and in trucks, it's the injectors, anything that's hydraulically controlled by oil, if you haven't changed your oil and it's been dirty and the valleys are clogged, it's going to take longer. So, back to the, you should change your oil. Not every 30,000 miles, you should change your oil all the time. I mean, cheapest thing you can do, Jerry will agree with me, cheapest thing that you can do, change your oil. So, if I want to argue that a brand new car with 500 miles on it takes 20 seconds to warm up and it gets all the oil in the right places through the transmission, through everything, perfect. Okay, that might be the case. But it's probably not the case for a car with 200,000 miles on it. 200,000 miles, odds are there's areas that have debris. Even if you do all the maintenance you possibly can, wear occurs, you know, just if there was no dirt in any valley or any oil passage, mains and rods and piston rings wear. They're consumable items. I know we don't want to think so, but just like brake pads, they wear out over time, and there's just no way around it. It just happens to be the way they are. Mechanically driven items wear out. I don't care if it's an electric motor or if it's a gas-powered engine. They are going to wear out when they get ran. So that being said, if the engine has wear on it, it will take longer for you to get oil to where you need it to get to, just because it might leak a little bit internally, might take a little bit longer, it might take a little more oil pressure than it used to. And it works the same in the transmission, folks. Transmission oil is no different. It gets dirty. Gear oil in differentials is the same thing. It gets dirty. Take dirty oil, just like Jerry said, it's thick, takes longer to move. Coolant gets dirty. It doesn't cool as well. It takes longer to get around. So if you think that, you know, oh, I saw the article from whoever, or you know, I saw the video that said that I could start my car up and run it, remember the point of your car. If it's brand new, maybe. If it's 20 years old, probably not. So just, you know, use your best judgment on that. I personally, like Jerry, will let my car warm up for, you know, I'll give it a minute, you know. I'll fire it up.
Well,
particularly because I like to get it warmed up so I don't freeze to death. I'll get it warmed up and then I'll get going.
What happens, Jim, if we're in Wisconsin with some of the cold weather that they've had up there, you know, below zero and all this stuff? And you're not running synthetic.
It's going to be 5 minutes or 10. It's 10 minutes in Missouri, Wisconsin, all those places where they have snow on the ground still. It's not 80 degrees outside. It's 20 still. Mm-hmm. But, yay. Why? So, yeah, it's going to take a while. And
I look at it. If you're starting your tractor, all right, which I have a tractor, and you're running the hydraulics on the front bucket, all right, you fire it up, and it needs to run a little bit before everything starts to move like it's supposed to. And so, you know, for them to say, oh, just go ahead and fire it up and drive off, you know, yeah, if you want to, you know, if you plan on your vehicle being expired by 100,000 miles, this stuff, it's like a cancer. You fire it up, and unless you're running a synthetic oil, a good quality, clean synthetic oil, you're not going to have a film that you can guarantee is going to be on those parts that need to have lube to it when you hit the key point. And here's the deal. Zero weight. What does a zero weight in motor oil mean? Or zero weight, all right? 0-20, 0-30. I started running 0-30 in a Triton engine in 1999. because I talk to the people that manufactures the 030 weight in full synthetic out of Wisconsin. They said, and I said, but if Ford Motor Company decides to test this, if I had an issue and they find out it's not their recommended oil that they had in it at the time they built the motor, what are they going to do? And he says, we'll guarantee your motor. While I was talking on the phone to him, they asked me, said, do you have a fax machine? Yep. Give me the number. Gave him a number. They wrote the warranty on my V10 motor in my 1999 Ford while I was sitting there talking to him. Fully guaranteed for as long as I owned that vehicle. If I had an oil-related problem, if I followed the procedures and their drain intervals with that 030 weight full synthetic. They said if that oil had been on the market, they would have designed it. I guess most of your engines are about 5 years in advance. They would have designed it using the 030 weight full synthetic on that motor. At 129,000 miles, that V10 was running perfect on the computers, on my shop computers. That's how good that stuff is. It's still that way. So, people, when we say change your oil, we mean change your oil. Hey, they make good paraffin-based oil as long as you change it. People have a tendency. We forget it. I call my synthetic oil my battered and abused oil because I do forget stuff. I know, as Jim would say, that's hard to believe, but I do forget it. You know, I may miss it 500 miles, 600, you know, and that's after Simmons sends me a notice that my oil change is due. And but I still don't have any problems with it because I do change it within the period of time. I kind of go like most people do with appointments. Okay, if you've got to be at your doctor's appointment at 8 o'clock in the morning, you try to be there at 7:45, even though the doctor may not show up till 8:20, but you've got to be there at 7:45. So you change the time. Okay, you've got an appointment at 8 o'clock, so you're going to be there at 8 o'clock. No, you're not. You're going to be there 15 minutes early. I do the same thing with changing the oil on my vehicle, changing the lubrication. If it's due at 7,500 miles, I do it at 5,000. Reason being is I want somebody in there under the hood looking at air filters, looking at any potential leaks or anything going on or problems with radiator hoses or water transportation systems, which is anything that has a hose to it and a gasket and a seal that has liquid in it. I mean, glycol in it, antifreeze. You know, all this stuff is really critical. If you'll do that and just pay attention to it and don't gripe. I mean, it's synthetic oil is not as cheap as regular paraffin base. But it's not that much difference. But it is longer. It will hold its integrity longer. And it's got a heavier blend of additives in it, so that lasts longer. So is it worth it? Oh, yeah. I've been running it since 1981. And I've tried everything else, and no, I run synthetic, full synthetic. I run full synthetic in my transmission. I run full synthetic in my differentials. I run full synthetic. I run synthetic when I pack the wheel bearings. Of course, you can't pack them on this new truck. But everything that I can get full synthetic, heavy-duty synthetic oil in it, a good brand. And the only reason I say a good brand, there's a little bit of difference in what additives they pack in these packages. But for what normal people do, running around Tucson, Arizona, you can run a full synthetic and you can get away with it. Whatever you want to put in there, but don't forget to upgrade your filter and don't forget to change it. Don't forget to follow the instructions on the can, believe it or not. And you'll be happy you did. You got anything you want to add to that, Mr. Mooney from Frontier Towing?
Oh, yeah, just real quick. So you're talking about the oils. And, yes, change your oil, folks. Cheapest cheapest thing you can do, and if you ever go, if no shop, if you go to a shop and they tell you that oil changes aren't necessary, go to a different shop. I never met a mechanic worth his salt that never said don't change your oil. So, but back to the flow. Remember when you're looking at the oils, you know it used to be it's 1040, right? It's 10W40. It's 0W20. It's 5W20. You know the W is for winter. Winter. So that means it's 5 weight in the winter when it's cold, so it can get through the motor quick, right? And then as it warms up, it gets to 20 weight. That's how the oils are designed. And they've been doing that for, I don't know, Jerry, what, 60, 70 years? So when somebody says, you know, mash the gas with no oil pressure, you can. You're just going to cause a lot of unneeded wear, a lot of extra wear that's going to occur when not necessary, because even the oil guys recognize that getting oil to all of the lubricating components is critical. And you know, if you've never seen a part that's worn that has locked up because lack of oil or lack of lube, it's pretty catastrophic. Bearings start to chip and fade. Rods. Jerry can tell you this. If you've never seen a rod come apart with that's been oil starved, or a main bearing that is just completely obliterated, and rods that are just, you know, they're purple. They're not even purple anymore. They went from this kind of, you know, brownish color that's got oil, you know, a metal that has got oil residue on them, to solid black because they went turned red hot and then they cooled off. And it's amazing how much damage can be done by lack of lubricant. So, you know, it's really, really critical. So, and if you're going to, like I said, if you want to jump in your car and mash the gas, and I know we do it, you know, I'm in a hurry, you know, start the car up, and I got the car started, no more than I start the car, I throw it in whatever gear, usually reverse, but because people back out of their driveway, you know, throw it in reverse, you know, and back out, and then I throw it in drive, and I smash the gas and go. You know, that's maybe the car's been running all of 30 seconds, you know. And maybe, you know, and Jerry, in the listener's defense, you know, if you get in your car and start it up and start texting, that's the only time I'm going to allow you to text. When you're sitting in your driveway and you just started your car, go ahead and text. Because if you text for a minute, well, then your oil gets up to the engine. It gets up and gets – your car gets lubricated. all the system gets lubricated. So if you're going to text while you're sitting in your driveway. Before you put it in drive, as soon as you put it in gear, throw that phone over in the corner. But even in transmissions, you know, an automatic transmission guy will tell you, and just like Jerry's talking about the film that's left on the components, and in an automatic transmission, you know, Honda with their constant velocity transmission that, you know, they've had around for years, that had tons of problems, and they're better, a lot better now, but you know, all those are fluid dependent items. Where, you know, discs in a transmission, plates, steels and discs and springs and clutches and, you know, and O-rings to apply pressure to a certain area to make the car go, right? And in today it's not an old 2-speed, you know, power glide or a 3-speed torque flight or Ford transmission, you know, it's 10 speeds in your transmission. It's unbelievable. I don't know how I get 10 speeds in there. I'd love to tear one apart one day. It's 10 actual gears so they can keep your engine at exactly the right RPM for optimal performance. So 10 speeds. I mean, that thing's got to be doing all kinds. I mean, it's got to be doing hand sprints inside that transmission. But I will tell you this, everything about it requires transmission fluid to flow through it. And dirty fluid is abrasive. It eats, it annihilates O-rings like nobody's business. It wears out the pistons that slide in and out, because in the transmission, folks, if you've never seen one, there's big pistons in there that look like a caliper. You know, they look like a piston and a caliper. They kind of a similar design. They go in and out, right? Big thing, like these all 83 springs around it, and you got a snap ring that holds it in, and the hydraulic pressure pushes it in, and the springs push it out, or vice versa, depending on what it is. And then there's bands and clutches and all kinds of things that go on inside of a transmission that require, and solenoids, oh my gosh, the solenoids galore that flow the oil. You know, if the oil gets dirty, the fluid gets stuck, write it off. You're tearing it apart. And it's not super serviceable. Old school transmission, take the valve body up, you can't tear it apart, look at it, oh, there's the little ball bearing that goes in there, and I can mess with it and do this. New style transmissions, you get a guy that can tear one of those apart, oh, that's a genius. Those guys are geniuses, because it's all kinds of everything in there. I mean, you talk about a puzzle. Holy Toledo. That's a puzzle of everything. So, and it all starts with oil in the pump. So, just saying. It's very critical to have all that stuff lubed. That's why it's critical to change your oil. I also think it's important to let your car warm up. You know, the other thing, too, is, I don't know, maybe this is just a sideline. You let it warm up, you know, if it's going to make noise, if it's making noise or something, you can hear it. You know, you'll hear it. Old school, I had this old Chevy pickup truck. It was a good truck, but I'll tell you what, it'd sit overnight and the lifters would bleed off. You know, so you'd start in the morning, it would, oh my gosh, it would clank like nobody's business. You know, until the oil pressure, you knew when the oil pressure hit the lifters because it would quiet. It would all of a sudden go, but it would run like crazy and clank, and all of a sudden, you know, finally after about a minute or two, it would quiet right out because the lifters pumped up and the valve train started working the way it was supposed to. So, you know, there's lots of little things that go on with your cars. And I'm a fan of letting it warm up. Just saying. If you're not, that's okay too. If it breaks,
I agree with you 100%. I agree with you. You know, there's nothing. You know, like if you want to text something, okay, I'm leaving the house now. Okay, by the time you text it, time you open your phone, time you close your phone and get out of it, you've already got your message across. So, and then it has a chance. I mean, when you put a little pan of water with about two-thirds of a cup of water on a stove and turn the direct heat on that sucker, how long does it take it before it's boiling? A car goes into closed loop at around 100, anywhere from 140 to 180, somewhere around there. Most of your thermostats are 195. And it's telling me that, oh, yeah, well, you fire that up, and the oil and lube is ready to go right now. I'm just going to have to say, I don't think so. You know, you're going to have to set me in front of an engine stand, fire that son of a gun off, and show me with a heat gun, infrared gun, what the temperature is. Different than what I've done with my infrared. So, I mean, you know, maybe yours is different than mine. I mean, most of the stuff has changed. Maybe they've got a little heater in the infrared. I don't know. But all I do know is you start a car up. Oh, yeah, well, you can just fire it right off. Yeah. How much extra wear does it put on that car? Because when you first start a car up, before it reached operating temperature and goes into closed loop, that's when your most wear is shown on this car. Now, that's normal wear, most wear, normal wear. And so I just have to say, okay, try it on just starting it up. You know, let it run about 2 minutes. 2 minutes you can count. Count to 60, 1,001, 1,002, or look at your watch. Get it around 2 minutes. Give it a chance for the oil to circulate, because when oil's circulating, just the fact that it's moving helps create temperature. And so you've got the engine block, it's getting warmer. You've got the fuel delivery system, it's getting warmer. One reason they don't want you to fire it up and let it idle or anything, because most of your old vehicles, when you start those up, that's when your fuel economy really bites the dust, because it takes fuel to heat that engine block. And so the carburetor comes on, you got your choke, it dumps fuel in it, raw fuel right into the cylinders, down the intake, into the cylinders, and that builds a fire. It's like putting wood in an old wood stove. If you want it to get hotter, put more wood in it. That's exactly what the theory was on this other stuff, by just adding fuel until it's up to operating temperature. Well, what I'm saying, if it wasn't critical to heat it then, I mean, I know that the fuel delivery system now is computer control. It'll give you exactly the amount of fuel that you need. Okay, I understand that. What happens if you've got carbon buildup? You haven't been staying on top of your maintenance program, and you've got carbon buildup on the cylinders and stuff. Okay, you got all that raw fuel that goes in there and just lays in there, lays in the soft carbons. And then you start it up, and it's a little hard to start. Well, it starts up and run a little bit rough, all right? You're going to tell me that you start it up and it's running rough, you just put it in gear and take off? That tells me that what are you going to do about the spark plugs that haven't cleared yet? I mean, you've got raw gas in there. What's the deal? Where's it going? What's it doing? So I just, you know, I still, and Wade over at the shop at Simmons, he tells them, he said, I don't care what they say. You will let it warm up a little bit before you take off. Wade's got three or four vehicles, but he'll tell the clients that. And he says, I've just, over the 29 or 30 years that he's been working over there, he said, I've just seen it where it just, the vehicle runs better, it sounds better, it's more, he said, it's almost like it's more relaxed when it's warmed up. And that's something to that. So anyway, and if you have any questions or anything, you'd like to join the conversation, 520-719-1490, 520-719-1490. We'll take any questions about full synthetics. We'll take any questions about oil change intervals. I do remember one thing about the oil change intervals. People say, okay, all you got to do is just change the filter. All right, now, let's clarify that. You change the filter. One, you change the filter, and you're supposed to change your oil at 3,000-mile intervals. That's with a lot of your it's older cars. So you change, let's pick it 5,000. We're going to do 5,000. So you're going to change your oil at 5,000. And you do it or don't do it. At what point do you think that the lack of lubrication is going to start wearing your engine out? If you've got one that says change at 5,000 and you're going to change at 7,500, where do you think the manufacturers come up with this number? Oh, well, by the way, you need to change it at 5,000 miles. Or you can go to 7,500. How about 15,000 miles on some of these foreign cars? How about 10,000 miles on Fords? How about 10,000 on some of the other cars out there that's manufactured now? I don't have enough nerve to change. If I want to change something, like I use my wife's 99 Ford, and I run 14,000 miles on an oil change, and is running full synthetic AMSOIL, full synthetic, and 14,000 miles, pulled it out, pulled sample, sent it to Phoenix, to Arizona Laboratories, had it tested, and the results come back, says, okay for continual use, recheck in 6,000 miles. Okay, that was 14,000. That would have been 20,000. Now, your extended drain interval, the 12 months or 25,000 miles, is 12 months and 25,000 miles, not 14 months and then redo it again at 6,000. So, and there was absolutely zero wear on this car, on this truck. The compression was the same. Everything was taken care of. But while we were doing all of this, we were also using a fuel additive to help control the soft carbons in the motor, keep the injectors clean, keep the fuel system clean enough in a 99. Now, they weren't that sophisticated in 99. They were up there, but they weren't as sophisticated as they are now. But you keep the lube, you keep the fuel, you keep everything the way it's designed and give that engine a chance to work that way, work like it was originally designed. You'll have a better engine, a more reliable engine. And, you know, that's the good information. If you want to wait and say, okay, well, it's got 100,000 miles, so I'm just not going to put anything in it, only the fuel treatment or anything, you better read your owner's manual. Better read your owner's manual on this one. Because in the late model owner's manuals, I've seen it in Ford and I've seen it in Chevrolet. It said do a can of additive at oil change, okay, which takes you around 7,500 miles on the stuff. Well, soft carbon start building at 7,500 miles. I mean, you're going to have soft carbon build it. I mean, it's there. Soft carbon actually builds a heck of a lot sooner than that. It starts when you fire up the engine. But when you get into problem areas, they're going about 7,500 miles, and then they say, okay, you need to do something with this now. All right? There is no exception on soft carbon in a gasoline-fired or diesel-fired anything. There is no exception. It's got it in lawnmowers. It's got it in boat motors. It's got it in automotive. If it's a combustion engine, and it takes gasoline, fuel, electric, and compression, you are going to have a byproduct coming from whatever fuels you use, with a few exceptions. One is like propane. Propane doesn't show them. We've taken engines apart that were used for irrigations out on the farms and stuff around Arizona, southern Arizona. The ones that run on propane or natural gas, there was no debris in the top of the motors. There's no buildup on the back of the valves. There's no carbon buildup on the top of the pistons. It was clean, but that's not of gasoline. It's not gas. It is a petroleum base because it comes out of ground, but it's not gas. It don't have all those additives and stuff put in it. I mean, it just burns clean. I mean, you can run it in forklifts in the middle of a closed area. No problem. Try that with gasoline. You'll be sick in an hour. The main thing that I'm trying to get across to you is you control. It's just like what Mike and him told me over there at the rehab. You actually control now what happens to you next. If you want your arteries clogged, just ignore everything we're telling you. Don't take your medicine on a regular basis. Don't take that fuel cleaner. Oh, another one. When I went in and they gave me my stents, and they put it in. Okay, big deal, put stents in. It was a big deal, even though I don't consider it a big deal because I'm still talking. However, if you don't take care and do what they tell you to do with your fuel delivery system in your body, which is your heart and your blood, you're going to have problems. Why is it any different with the fuel delivery system on your car? I did a 2-hour program on how cars and the human body are related. But at that time, I had a cardiologist that was doing the body, the heart and stuff, and I was doing the car. And then he knew a little bit about cars, and man, that turned into one educational program. And so we've decided that the automobile was actually designed a lot based on humans, because, you know, they're pretty perfect when they come out. But you look at the stuff And when it starts, when you start talking fuel systems and you start talking, okay, Jerry, we give you some pills that does about the same thing as you would probably call it a fuel additive to clear the injectors in a car. Yeah, basically, that's exactly what they did. I'm going, okay, except it don't taste as bad. And you can actually do it. But you have to maintain it. So maintain your car. Keep it to where it's nice and dependable. And, you know, and I don't know how much time we got. We got about, say, 8-10 minutes left. So we've got plenty of time on this one. But the other thing, I want to get back to the cold weather. Unless Jim's got something he wants to add on what I've just finished talking about.
No, go ahead. I'll let you jump on the cold weather and I'll mention on that.
All right. On the cold weather, batteries. Batteries on the cold weather. Batteries are scheduled to last 24 to 30 months. 24 to 30, 36, depending on the age of the car and how you maintained them. But the average is 24 to 30 months. Last week, I went out trying to start my car, start my truck. Click, 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 click. I said, oh, man, this is a diesel. It's got about $500 worth of battery sitting on the hood. I'm going, oh, this just stinks. I said, gee, I remember changing batteries, but I don't know in which vehicle it was. So I took it over to Simmons and called them and said, you might as well get me a set of batteries. I'm bringing this thing in. Well, I got over there, and they said, Jerry, we just put a set of batteries in this thing March of last year. And the technician, Bill, said, what did you leave on? And I said, I didn't leave anything on. That's the first thing I checked when I went out. And I didn't leave anything on. Okay. Well, I put a charger on it, a slow trickle charger, you know, just a little 3-amp jobber, to do a long time, 30-hour charge on that system. I did, and it fired up. What I failed to remember that, hey, you need to fire that thing up more often. How, because you have so many computers on that thing, it's always got something on. It's got a little draw on it or something. And then it was setting for almost 6 weeks through the coldest weather we had in Tucson and the wettest weather we had in Tucson with the cold. So, you know, if you do that, you're going to find out a couple of things. One, your sensors for your tire pressure is going to be low and on. But and also, your battery can be pulled down. Now, these batteries are good batteries. They're not cheap batteries. And once I charged them up, and then we took them over there, we put them on every piece of equipment they make for batteries. And they kept coming back. One, we checked one, which was a handheld analyzer, and it come back and said they were okay. And one of them had 10 cranking amps, cold cranking amps, different than the other one. And I said, well, maybe that's wrong. And they said, I don't think so, but we'll put the other big vat machine on it and then see what we got. So they put everything on it, and it come out that, Jerry, we'll change your batteries. But you absolutely don't need to change your batteries. We can't even turn them in for being defective or anything like that because there's nothing wrong with them, according to all the equipment. So remember when you're out there playing, if you've got these vehicles, there's cases where you could drive, I think it was a BMW or a Mercedes, to the airport. Get on the plane and be gone 1 week, come back, and have to have the vehicle jumped or towed from the airport parking lot because the batteries are dead. Has nothing to do with the batteries being dead. Has everything to do with keep alive memories on all these computers and stuff on these electronic cars. So, you know, just keep that in mind while you're figuring it out there. And don't assume that battery that's 24 to 30 months old. See, I'd forgotten I changed the batteries in my truck when I took it in. But when you have a car that's running, let's say you're pushing the envelope at 30 months or 28 months, and you're getting ready to go from Tucson, Arizona, you're going to drive into the White Mountains, where it's, you know, temperature is about 17 degrees, because you're going to go snowing at the White Mountains. People, you are gambling. Your alternator is probably working overtime trying to keep that battery up at this point. And when you get up there and it sets overnight while you're skiing, or all, during the day while you're skiing, and you go back out there, and all of a sudden there's no heat to help this battery charge up. It's all cold. No, you're going to be calling in Frontier Towing. They'll come up there and get you, but that's a long build. Not a hill, a bill to come and get you out of the White Mountains.
Yeah, you're not going
to
like
that. All right,
that.
What do you want to add?
You know, it's that. You're not going to like that. But real quick here, because I think we're getting close. Yeah, you know, folks, the batteries, you know, work worse. They work poorer. Let me rephrase that. Their performance is much poorer in cold weather. And you wouldn't, I don't know if this makes sense, but it's, think of it this way. A battery uses acid and lead to create electricity, right? It's a chemical reaction. And when the battery gets really cold, the electrons inside move really slow. So the battery appears to be dead, but it may come back to life if it warms up. But the battery appears to be dead because you can't get the power out of it. There's no energy to come out because there's no reaction inside going on. So think of it as you went to turn on your faucet and you turn it on, and as much as you can get is a little, it just kind of barely trickles out, right? That's what happens when the battery gets cold. The chemical reaction in the battery will not allow the battery to generate the electricity that it needs, to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Also, when they get super cold, I've seen this. I have actually seen this, not in Tucson, Arizona, because it doesn't get that cold, but I have seen batteries frozen and split open because the water inside freezes, and well, like all things that we've seen with frozen water, it has a tendency to break pipes. Well, it'll split a battery case wide open. So if you think that batteries need to be warmed up or kept warm, you're correct, and cold weather does absolutely affect their ability to work. So a weakened battery battery that's a couple years old, like Jerry says, can look really, really bad when it gets really, really cold. And if you're in the White Mountains, I guess the old trick of you know, my dad putting the light bulb in next to the battery, not an LED light bulb, folks, a real incandescent light bulb, to keep it warm, I guess that's why they did it. Because they knew that
that's right.
A little bit of heat kept that battery alive.
So,
at any rate, and the parachute.
All right, Jim, you can take us out. We're out of time for the first hour.
All right. Folks, we're coming up on the top of the hour. So come on back here in about 2 minutes. 2 minutes, we'll be ready to go, and we'll be right back here with you after a quick station identification.